If I could kill every priest and every god, and all those others stalking the streets with stones in their hands, I would. For the whores and all you took from them, and for the children. He rose, shouldering his pack, his useless weapons, his useless armor, and faced the others, seeing that they too were ready, and when Tar gestured, they fell in one by one. One more night, in the name of innocence. Bottle's joints were on fire. Swollen and red, they made every step agony. Since when was a story enough to keep someone alive, no matter how heartbreaking, no matter how tragic, no matter how incensed the listener might become? The world lacked such simplicity. He'd never believed in speeches, was ever suspicious of that power to incite. Dreams could be voiced, desires could be uttered, and then whispered back with fervor, but in the end, most people eventually turned away, and the crowd dispersed, and it was back home and getting on with living. For all the boldness of believers on the front line, when the fires ebbed and no one was looking, it was time again to hide away. But maybe we need that, our little hole to climb down into. For some respite, where all the clamoring voices in your head can just die away, for blessed silence. And the ones who never get to that, who are so consumed they can find nowhere to hide, no place to rest, see what happens to them, see the fever in their eyes. They have made their lives torture. They have made the voice of their spirit one long, unbroken howl. Fevered, aye. He was that and more. Where the walking dead. Fiddler's words, or someone's anyway. Maybe Cuttle. No matter. The walking dead didn't feel pain like this. The walking dead didn't carry on their backs 1,000 questions, questions with no answers. His grandmother was now hobbling beside him. She didn't belong on this trail, in this desert, but there she was. And maybe she wasn't his grandmother at all, just some other wax witch twisting reeds in her arthritic hands, making dolls for the children in the village ahead. Gifts. Charms. I remember you giving them away. Toys, you said, head bobbing. Free toys. And they all ran up to you, laughing. But you wove protections into those dolls. Blessings, wards against illness. Nothing powerful, nothing to stop, say, a flash flood or an avalanche. But the father that lashed out with his fists, the uncle who slipped under the blankets in the dead of night, those ones paid for what they did. And the cuts that healed, the fevers that went away. So, grandmother, I'll walk this last walk in your memory. Make me a doll for this pain. And take this child by the hand and tell him again how they will pay for what they did. For years, before her nails were worn down to bloody shreds by all that she clawed at, Smiles had carried a dream. Carried it around like a pearl inside a battered shell. Of a day in the future when she was a mother, and she'd given birth to twins, two girls squalling and hissing the way girls do, playing on the beach under her watchful eye. And then, in a dark, desolate season, with the skies grey and the seas swollen, the older ones would come to her.
"The fish are gone," they'd say. "The spirits must be appeased. Choose one, mother, and make of her the gift of our people, our gift to the thirsty waters."
And she would walk away, calling her daughters back to the hut. They were low-born, the whole family. Her husband and the father of the twins was gone, maybe dead. It was all down to her. One child to be blessed, the other cursed. Yet arguments could be made as to who was which. She knew all about that. A night of bitter winds, of fires doused by spray. And Smiles would set out, knives in hand. And she would kill every one of those elders, in all their hunger, in all their needs, now that they were too old to fish, now that the only authority they still possessed came with their threats and warnings about angry, vengeful spirits. Aye, she would show them a vengeful, angry spirit, and the gifts it would make to the hungry sea would appease 1,000 spirits of the deep. Those kinds of dreams were honey on the tongue, heady with the juices of pleasure and satisfaction. She suspected such dreams hid in the hearts of everyone. Desires for justice, for redress, for a settling of the scales. And, of course, that sour undercurrent of knowledge that none of it was possible, that so much would rise in opposition, in self-preservation even, to crush that dream, its frail bones, its pattering heart. Even that could not take away the sweet delight, the precious hope. Wells for the coin, league stones for the wreaths, barrows for the Widdershins' dance. The world was filled with magical places awaiting wishes, and empires raised lotteries, opened games, sought to lift high heroes among the common folk.
And everyone rushes up with their dreams. But stop, look back, gods, look around. If all we seek is an escape, what does that say about the world we live in? That village, that city, that life. We are desperate with our dreams. What, oh what, does that say?
So those two children had forgotten about toys. She wasn't surprised. She remembered the day she sat with the last dolls she owned. But across from her sat no one. Where was her sister? They'd taken her.
But how can I play? Child, she was taken long ago. You cannot remember what you never had. Go out now and play with Skella. Skella is high-born. She just orders me around. That's the way it is, child. Best you get used to it.
In her dream, she saved murdering Skella for last. Cuttle's brothers had been on the wall when it came down. He remembered his shock. Their city was falling. His brothers had just died defending it. Hengi's soldiers were in the gap, clambering over the wreckage, coming out of the dust, howling like demons. Lessons, then. No wall was impenetrable, and the resolute in spirit could die as easily as could the coward. He would have liked to believe it wasn't like that, none of it, this whole mess, and that children could be left to play and not worry about the life ahead, to play the way he and his brothers had played, unmindful of the irony as they charged each other with wooden swords and fought to defend a midden behind the fishworks, dying one by one like heroes in some imagined last stand, giving their lives to save the swarming flies, the screeching gulls and the heaps of shells. Where knelt a helpless maiden, or some such thing? Maiden, stolen crown, the jeweled eye of a goddess. They wove fine stories around their deeds, didn't they? In those long winters when it seemed that all the grey, sickly sky wanted to do was collapse down on the whole city, crush it forever, they lived and died their shining epics. A backside kick sent him out from childhood. He'd not forgotten those games, however. They lived with him and would until this, his last damned day. But not for the obvious reasons. Nostalgia was like a disease, one that crept in and stole the colour from the world and the time you lived in. Made for bitter people, dangerous people, when they wanted back what never was. And it wasn't even our innocence back then. We never felt innocent. They spent day after day living older than their years, after all. And no, not even the ties of family blood, those so familiar faces he grew up alongside, and all the safety and protection and comfort they offered. No, those games stayed with him because of something else, something he now understood to have been with him, undying since those days. Maiden, stolen crown, the jeweled eye of a god, die for a reason, that's all. Cuttle, you're the last brother left who can do this. The others didn't make it, not to this epic's end. So you carry them now, here on your back, those boys with their flushed faces, you carry them. You're carrying them right past their useless deaths on that wall in a war that meant nothing. Take them now to where they need to go. We're going to die for a reason. That's not too much to ask, is it? You should have seen our last stands. They were something. Korab was thinking about Leoman of the Flails. Not that he wanted to, but that evil, lying, murdering bastard was like a friend you didn't want anymore who just kept showing up with a stupid grin on his ugly face. He was covered in dust, too, and he had no idea why, and no, he didn't care either. That's what came of believing in people. All sorts of people, with their foreheads all hot and burning and not a drink of water in sight. The man burned a city to the ground, tried killing 50 million people too, or however many were in Yucatan when the army broke through and the temple caught fire and the priest's head was rolling around on the floor like a kickball with a face on it. Korab had wanted to be good. He'd grown up wanting that and nothing else. The world was bad and he wanted it to be good. Was that stupid? What was that his tutor used to say after the man had cried himself dry and in his fists were tangled clumps of his own hair? What was his name again? Baldy? He'd look over at young Korab and say,
"Good? You don't know the meaning of the word. In fact, you're about the worst student I have ever had the horror of entertaining."
That was fine. He didn't entertain very good either, Korab recalled, old Baldy. In fact, he was the most boring man in the whole village, which was why they voted him to teach the young ones. Because the young ones were causing so much trouble getting underfoot, and all the grown-ups decided they needed to be talked at until they turned into motionless lumps and their eyes fell out and rolled like marbles. But those fists holding clumps of hair, that was exciting. Birds could use that for nests. So maybe Baldy really was entertaining when he did his red face thing and bounced around on his stool. Leoman was no better. It was just Korab's luck, all these bad teachers. He remembered the day he made his mother cry. The Gafan brothers had been teasing him for what he couldn't recall, so he'd chased them down, softened them up a bit, and then used a rope he stole from a ragman to tie them all together, wrist to ankle, the four of them, their faces like burst gourds, and dragged them into the house.
"Ma, cook these!"
Grunter Gafan had shown up to get his children back, had the gall to threaten Korab's mother, and since Kanarab, his father, was still off in the wars, it fell to Korab to stand up to the pig-faced bully. But she'd been cooking a stew in that pot, and besides, once Grunter's head was inside it, there was no more room for the boys. They said he smelled like onions for weeks. It was the spilled supper that made his ma cry. At least, that's what Korab worked out, eventually. Couldn't have been anything else, and if they had to move to get away from the Gafan clan, the new neighborhood was nicer anyway. And the day Grunter got killed, well, he should have known better than trying to slide all the way under that wagon, and Korab's kicking him in the head a few times had nothing to do with his tragic end. Nobody liked Grunter anyway, though Korab probably shouldn't have used that for his defense at the trial. So it was the priest pits for young Korab. Cutting limestone wasn't that bad a job, except when people got crushed or coughed their lungs out, spraying blood everywhere. And this was where he started listening to stories people told. Passing the time. It had been a mistake. Of course, if not for the uprising, he'd probably still be there, getting crushed and coughing his lungs out. And the uprising, well, if he looked back on it, that had been the beginning of his own rebellion, which later led him to join the bigger one. All because people told stories about freedom and the days before the Malazans. Stories that probably weren't even true. Leoman. Leoman of the Flails. And Shaik, and Toblakai, and all the fanatics, and all the bodies. Nothing good in any of that. When you believe people telling all those lies. Was the adjunct any different? He wasn't sure anymore. He didn't understand all this business about being unwitnessed. That was what he'd been fighting against all his life. But now I got a kickball head, and it's burning up in the sun. And by dawn, we'll all be done with, finished, dead, and no one left to see. Is that what she meant? But what's the point of that? He had been born stubborn, or so everyone said. Maybe it had made for problems in his life, but Tar wasn't one to dwell on them. Here, this night, stubbornness was all he had left. Sergeant to a squad of Marines, he'd never thought he'd make it this far. Not with Fiddler there, taking care of everything that needed taking care of. But now Fid wasn't running this squad anymore. Now it's mine. I'm the one gets to walk it into the ground. I'm the one gets to watch them die like flies on the sill. He planned on being the last to go down. He had his stubbornness, after all, his way of pushing and pushing until he pushed through. He remembered the day they formed up, officially, in Arran. The chaos, the guarded looks, all the bitching that went on. Unruly, unhappy, close to falling apart. Then a few veterans stepped up. Fiddler, Cuttle, Gessler, Stormy, and did what was needed. And that's when I knew that I was going to stick with this, be a soldier. I had them to follow, and that was good enough. It still is. It has to be. Fiddler's up ahead somewhere. Cuttle's right behind me. Only ever had the adjunct as commander, and she's kept me alive this long. She wants another march. She'll get it. No questions, no complaining. He twisted round, glad at his squad. First one falls, I will personally curse to the 13 gates of the abyss. Am I understood? That calls for a drink, said Cuttle. The others laughed. It wasn't much of a laugh, but for Tar it was good enough. They'll make it through this night. Past that, I won't ask them for a damned thing. Unless I need to. Himble Thrupp had picked up a new name, Shorthand. He liked it. The old family line of Thrupps, well, his brothers were welcome to it. That long, ropey thing tying him to where he'd come from and who he'd been, well, he'd just cut it, gone. All the shit going one way, all the shit going back the other way, the rotted birth cord no Thrupp dared touch.
Snick, gone, good riddance. Shorthand it is, on account of my short hands, you see. A damned giant lizard took 'em. No, boys, it's all true. A giant lizard. Chain Camals, they was called. But we called 'em Stumpies, on account of their tails. This was back when I was a heavy. Aye, I don't look like a heavy, I know that. But it ain't just size makes a heavy. In fact, I know a Dalhanese heavy no bigger than a toad, and no prettier either. It's all attitude. Just look at the ones hauling those ropes, the ones just up ahead. What in Hood's name are they doing, dragging these wagons? It don't matter. They're heavies, and someone told them. Haul these wagons, and so that's what they're doing. You see? Attitude. Aye, we stopped them cold, those Stumpies. They swung high, we ducked low. They gave us the blade, we gave them the shield. That's how it's done. True, I won't lie, not many of us left. We was outnumbered, badly outnumbered. These days, I'm working for Master Sergeant Lieutenant Quartermaster Paws. He's just gone back to check on a cracked axle 3 wagons back. Be with us shortly. Me? I'm waiting for our squad of Marines to stand guard, aye. But they had a scrap last night, got cut up a bit. But it never went further, since nobody's got the strength to take it further, if you see what I mean. Still, needed some sewing and the like. I'm expecting them any time. The name's Shorthand.
Something hard as stone smashed into the side of his head. Rackle lowered the mace, watched as Stull and Bester dragged the body off to one side. A score or so regulars had looked up at the scuffle and now watched with dull eyes as they went, their legs dragging them along as if those legs were the last parts of them still working. Rackle wasn't ready to be like that. Hood take 'em all, he wasn't.
So much for the bodyguard, he said.
Quiet,
hissed Bester, nodding ahead to the lines of haulers.
Get up on the wagon rack, but go slow and careful. They're going to feel the extra weight no matter what.
Rackle grunted.
I've surpassed feeling anything, Best.
But he edged up close to the wagon, reached up one hand and set a foot on the helper, and as the wagon rolled ahead, he let it lift him from the ground, nice and slow, the way Best wanted it. Rackle watched as Stull rejoined Bester, and the two melted away into the gloom. So far, so good. Somewhere in this wagon, probably packed dead centre, were Blistig's special casks. Time had come for a drink. He drew himself higher up, leaning against the bales as he did so, reaching for more handholds. That water, he could smell it. Close. Paws crawled out from under the wagon.
Cracked right through, he said, climbing to his feet. What's in this one?
he asked the man beside him. The once company cook scratched at his beard.
Some lantern oil, horseshoes, wax, grease.
Grease? And it didn't occur to you to maybe use some of it on this damned axle?
We were saving it for when it got real bad, sir.
Aye, maybe that was a mistake.
All right, Paws sighed. Cut the haulers loose and send them on. I'll take a closer look at what else is up there.
Aye, sir, but I don't think anybody's going to come back for whatever you think we still need.
Paws looked round. They'd been left behind by the train.
Shit. Even so, there might be a child hiding under the blankets, the way they come crawling out of the unlikeliest of places, or too sick to move.
I'll be on with it then, sir.
Spread the haulers out with the rest.
Aye, sir.
Paws watched him go, and then heaved himself up onto the bed of the wagon. Trying to ignore the fire someone had lit in the back of his throat and his growing sense of helplessness, he set to exploring. The kegs of grease were pretty much empty, with only a few handfuls of the rancid gunk left, so it probably wouldn't have been enough to save the axle anyway. He tried pushing clear a cask filled with horseshoes, but he no longer had the strength left to do that. Clambering over it, he thumped the nearest bale.
Anyone down there? Wake up or get left behind!
Silence. Paws drew his dagger and slit open the bale.
Spare uniforms? Gods below! If the haulers find out, they'll skin me alive!
He cut open a few more. Tick for mattresses. Lead shot packed in wool for slingers.
We don't have any slingers. Who's quartermaster of this mess?
Oh, me. Right.
That's it, then, he muttered. Master Sergeant Paws, Fire Quartermaster Paws.
Can I do that, Lieutenant?
You can, because I'm telling you so, or do I need to take this to Fist kindly?
Please, sir, no, don't do that. He hates me.
Odd, he doesn't hate me, Master Sergeant.
Really, sir?
I'm certain of it, Master Sergeant.
Reasonably, I hope.
All right, no more excuses for the old man. He hates us all. This is what happens to a bald man who starts collecting combs.
Quartermaster Paws.
He looked up, saw Fist Blistig standing at the back of the wagon.
Fist, I need to speak to you.
Aye, sir, what can I do for you?
You can give me my casks.
Casks? Oh, those casks.
Get over here, Paws. I ain't in the mood to be looking up at you.
He clambered his way to the back of the wagon, dropped down onto the ground. At the impact, his knees folded under him and he swore as he sank lower. And the knife meant for his heart went into his upper chest instead. Paws fell back, sliding from the blade. Blood sprayed, pattering the dusty ground like raindrops. He found himself staring up at the jade strangers.
Bleeder,
Blistig said, moving into his line of sight and looking down at him.
That'll do.
He listened to the fist walking away, and he wanted to laugh.
Saves me a night's march.
Things were quiet for a time, as he felt himself fading away. And then he heard the crunch of a foot stepping close to the side of his head. He blinked open his eyes.
Look, it's the Grey Man, the Harrower. Come for me. I knew I rated special attention.
The rotted skeleton crouched down to stare at him with black, empty sockets. Paws smiled.
Just leave it by the door.
Balm looked round, scowling.
So where is he?
Throat Slitter hacked out a dry cough that left him doubled over. On one knee he gasped for a time and then said in a voice like sifting sand,
Probably running an errand for poor Sergeant.
Deadsmell snorted.
Errand? You lost your mind, Throat? Nobody's running errands anymore. He should be here. No, I don't like this.
Balm drew off his helm and scratched at his scalp.
Throat, climb up and give it a look over, will you?
There ain't nothing worth stealing up there, Sergeant.
I know that, and you know that. But that don't mean anybody else knows it.
Go on.
Groaning, Throat Slitter slowly straightened, made his way over to the side of the wagon.
Widdershins, said Balm, go up and talk to the haulers. See what they know.
What they know is the sight of their own feet, Sergeant.
I don't care.
The mage made his way to the front of the wagon.
Down to a crawl,
Balm observed, eyeing the wagon's wobbly wheels rocking past.
We'll be lucky making 2 leagues tonight.
Throat Slitter pulled himself onto the sideboard. The crossbow quarrel coming out of the darkness caught him in the right buttock. He howled. Balm spun round, bringing up his shield. A quarrel slammed into it, skittered up past his face, slicing cheek and ear.
Ambush!
The wagon trundled to a halt. Throat Slitter had dropped back down, only to fall onto his side, a stream of curses hissing from him. Dead Smell threw himself down beside him.
Lie still, damn you! Got to cut it out, or you're useless to us!
But Throat Slitter had managed to get one hand around the quarrel's shaft. He tore it loose, flung it to one side. Dead Smell stared at the man. He hadn't made a sound. With bloodied hands, Throat Slitter signalled, someone in wagon. The healer nodded, looked round. Balm had squatted down behind his shield, short sword readied. Widdershins was nowhere to be seen. The last of the regulars on this flank had simply melted away, and though the glow from the strangers was now painting the desert pan and luminous green, their attackers were nowhere to be seen. Dead Smell collected a pebble and flung it at Balm. It struck his hip and the sergeant's head snapped around. More hand signals. Balm backed until he was pressed against the wagon's front wheel. With his tongue, he was trying to lap up the blood trickling down his cheek. He flung a series of gestures off to his right and then glanced back at Dead Smell, and, tongue snaking out yet again, he nodded.
Thank Hood.
Dead Smell met Throat Slitter's eyes, jerked his head upward.
Make a show.
Drawing his knives, Throat Slitter gathered into a crouch. Rackle held himself perfectly still, not quite the way they'd planned this. One wounded to show so far. The fist wouldn't be happy, but maybe he could salvage this mess. He heard the wounded one hiss,
Get up on top, Dead Smell, and take a look around. You lost your mind, Throat? Just do it, growled the sergeant.
The weight of the wagon shifted.
Here he comes. Hey, Dead Smell, I got me a nice surprise waiting for you.
He tightened his grip on the mace in his right hand. A sound from the back of the wagon. He twisted round to see the wounded one sliding up into view.
Shit!
Another shudder of the wagon as Dead Smell began pulling himself up the side. Rackle looked across at Throat Slitter, saw the man grin. Time to leave. He rose, spun round. Widdershins gave the bastard a smile as he drove his short sword into the man's gut and then up under his heart.
Stay low, Wid!
Throat Slitter hissed. He let the body's weight pull him down behind some bales.
Where's the other one?
He asked.
More than one,
Dead Smell replied, sliding in from the side.
Two, I'd guess. Snipers with crossbows, probably lying in shallow pits somewhere out there.
The wagon rocked violently from the opposite side, and a moment later Sergeant Hellion was staring down at them.
You lads in trouble?
Head low, Sergeant,
Throat Slitter hissed.
Snipers!
Oh, yeah? Where?
Out in the desert!
She squinted in the direction he pointed, and then twisted round.
Spread out, squad. We're going to advance on some dug-in positions. Go for hunting time. Oh, and shields up. They got crossbows.
Dead Smell stared across at Throat Slitter, who simply shook his head.
Listen, Sergeant.
You got a wounded man here, healer.
Hellion pointed out, and then she clambered across, followed by 2 soldiers from her squad. Others had gone round the wagon, advancing slowly on the flank. Hellion dropped down.
Sergeant Balm, hold fast, will you? We got this.
You won't find him. Balm replied. Saw a couple of shadows running off.
Really? Which way?
Into the regulars. We lost them, Hellion.
The woman sagged.
What were they after?
Hood knows.
Having observed all this from atop the wagon, Deadsmell turned back.
Nice work, Wid. Though it would have been good to have taken him alive.
Wasn't interested in talking,
Widdershins replied.
They probably killed Shorthand.
Deadsmell was silent. He should have thought of that.
We need to look for him.
And leave the wagon,
Throatslitter demanded.
There ain't nothing on this wagon.
Right, sorry. Got caught up somehow. Anyway, I doubt I can walk, so I can stay behind and, guard.
Where'd you get it, Throat?
Widdershins asked.
Where it means I can't walk, Wid.
In the butt,
Deadsmell explained.
It ain't bleeding. Did that quarrel hit bone?
Don't think so.
Miracle with your skinny.
Just go find Shorthand, will you?
Deadsmell nodded over at Widdershins, and the two of them climbed down from the wagon. As all of this had been going on, the rest of the column had simply gone round them. On this flank, Sergeant Erb's squad had arrived, and after a few words with Balm and Hellion, Erb led his marines onward. Balm faced his two soldiers.
We was targeted specifically, he said.
The marked casks, said Widdershins. Don't matter that we used it all up on the children. They still think we're holding back.
Blistig, said Deadsmell.
Balm's face twisted in distaste, and he reached up to wipe more blood from his cheek. Then he licked his fingers.
Killing officers is one thing, but a fist?
I don't know. Who'd complain? Deadsmell demanded.
It's mutiny.
We ain't going against the Adrunk's command in this.
Wrong. In a way, that's exactly what we're doing. She made him fist.
But now he's trying to kill his own soldiers.
Aye, Deadsmell.
Widdershins hissed to get their attention.
Tlani Mas coming, Sergeant.
Now what? The figure halted before Deadsmell.
Healer, there is need for you. You're way past helping. The one named Pors is dying from a knife wound. Will you come?
Deadsmell turned to Balm.
All right, the sergeant said. I'll go find Kindly.
Shortnose had been cut loose. The rest agreed it should be him, and he went and found Flashwit and Mayfly, and a little while later Saltlick joined them. None of them said much, but it was clear that Shortnose was in charge. He didn't know why, but he wasn't in the mood to argue anyway, so it was him whether he wanted it to be or not. He led them into the press of the regulars, where soldiers melted from their path and with eyes all hollow and haunted tracked them as they went past. Maybe they'd been harnessed like oxen, but that didn't mean they weren't paying attention to whatever was going on around them. Most of it wasn't worth chewing on, but sometimes some unguarded comment hung around and then, when something else arrived, it came back and things started making sense. They weren't oxen. They were heavies, and word had reached them that Shorthand had a broken skull and probably wasn't going to last the night, and that a squad of marines had been ambushed, with one of them down but luckily not dead. Looked like the one who busted Shorthand's head got himself gutted by a marine, but at least two more attackers had gotten away. There weren't just two of them, Shortnose knew. Two with crossbows, aye, stolen from a wagon. At least seven others with them, though. Fist Blistig's gang of thugs. Every army had them. They were only trouble when some fool put them all together in one place, and Blistig had done just that. Head breaking a heavy, and from behind, too? That needed answering. Shorthand had been a knot in the saw of the Stumpies. He'd blunted a lot of teeth on that saw. Bad luck about the fingers, but cutting wood's a dangerous business. Almost, Shortnose frowned, almost as dangerous as being a heavy. Too bad that Blistig wasn't with his crew when they found it. They wouldn't have killed him, though. Just let him watch as they waded into his gang, disarming them and breaking arms and legs, with at least one stamp down from Mayfly crushing a fool's pelvis, making him squirt in both directions. Aye, it would have been great for the fist to see when Saltlick found one of the stolen crossbows and tried to jam it butt-end first down a thug's mouth. Things tore and snapped and broke, but he got it as far down as the middle of the throat, which was something. They left it there. Shortnose and Flashwit just used their fists and pounded faces into bloody pulps, and that took a lot of punches, but the only people looking on were regulars, and eventually those regulars just started walking again, since there was nothing else to be done. Somebody blindsided a heavy. That wasn't done, ever. But even Shortnose was surprised when a regular, a sergeant leading his squad past, looked down on the bodies of the thugs and spat at the nearest one. No real spit, just the sound, the stab of his head, clear enough to take its meaning. And Shortnose looked across to Flashwit and then Saltlick, and they nodded back. Just as the heavies weren't all oxen, the regulars weren't all pack mules. They'd seen, they'd listened, they'd made up their minds, and that was good. Better that than killing them all, wasn't it?
That'd take all night, or even longer.
Phoned him, Fest, said Captain Raband, kindly turned to Balm.
Pull everybody back now. This is between me and Blistig, understood? The sergeant nodded and then hesitated. Fist, you're going to kill him, ain't you?
Sergeant?
Well, sir, it's just, if you ain't gonna, cause of some rules or something, a word to Throat Slitter or Smiles, who's in Tar's squad, or
Marine, listen well to what I'm about to say. Unless you want to see one of your Marines executed, you will not touch Fist Blistig. Am I understood?
Begging your pardon, Fist, but come the sun's rise, we're all going to be crawling, if that. So that kind of threat don't mean much, if you see what I mean. We got us a list under Blistig's name, Fist, and we're expecting you to carve a nice red line right through it, starting with him.
You are talking mutiny, Sergeant.
Ugly word, that one, sir. What did the bridge burners call it? Culling. Old Malazan habit, right? Picked it up from the Emperor himself, in fact, and then the Empress, who did the same.
As she sought to do with the Wiccans, Sergeant. Or have you forgotten?
Aye, easy to get carried away, sir. But tonight we're talking one man. Kindly glanced across at Raband, who stood waiting.
Is the Fist alone, Captain?
No, sir. Fist Sort and Captain Scanneroa with him, along with Captain Ruthengard. There's been an accusation voiced, sir. I was planning on telling you on the way, but...
And he shot Balm a look.
Ruthengard says there's blood on Blistig's knife. Pours his blood.
Balm swore.
Tog's bloody jowls! By his own hand?
Raband shrugged.
Lead on, Captain,
kindly said, so quiet the words barely carried. Balm watched them go. Dead Smell followed a pace behind his guide. Ahead, the other Talanimas had raised a tarp. Lanterns were lit, shutters slipped back, wicks turned up and blazing. It had been a long way back along the trail, 40 or more paces. Nearby squatted a wagon. In the harsh light beneath the tarp, he saw Pause's body.
Blood everywhere. He won't survive this.
He edged past the Talanimas and made his way under the tarp, falling to his knees beside Pause, studied the wound.
This is a bleeder above the heart. He should be already dead.
But he could see the faint pulse, pushing out thinning trickles of blood. The man's breathing was shallow, rasping.
Not a long, too. Please, not a long. I've got no magic here, he said, looking up and seeing nothing but withered, lifeless faces staring back down at him. Shit, no help there.
He stared back down at Pause.
Seen the insides of plenty of people, he muttered, living undead. Well, had a teacher once, a priest, dresser of the dead. He had some radical notions. Gods, why not? He's going to die either way.
Dead Smell drew out his sewing kit.
Said it should be possible to go right inside a body, clamp the bleeder, and then sew it back together, right there inside. Not that it'll help much if he's got a punctured lung, too. but no blood froth at the mouth. Not yet. So, I guess I'll give it a try.
He looked up. Two of you, I need your hands. I need the wound held open, wide as you can make it.
Gods, those are foul-looking fingers you immersed got.
There is nothing living on our hands, said one of them.
What's that got to do with anything?
Deadsmell asked.
We will carry no infection into his flesh, healer.
No, but the knife blade that did this probably has.
His bleeding has cleaned the wound, healer. The greatest risk of infection will be from your hands and your tools.
Threading a needle with gut, Deadsmell scowled.
That old priest shared your opinion, but there's nothing I can do about that, is there?
No.
Deadsmell's vision spun momentarily and then steadied once more.
Unbelievable. I'm dying, even as I'm trying to save another man from doing the same. And really, is there any point to this?
Two Imas had knelt, reaching to prise open the wound.
Dig your fingers in. I need to see as much as I can.
No, wait. Now all I can see are your fingers. One spoke.
Healer, one of us shall hold open the wound. The other shall reach inside and find the two severed ends of the vessel.
Yes, that's it. And once you've got them, pinch hard, stop the blood flow, and then bring them together so I can see them.
We are ready, healer.
He's lost a lot of blood. He's in shock. This probably won't work. Surprised he's not already dead. I might just kill him. Or he'll die later. Blood loss. Infection.
He trailed off, looked across at blank, staring, lifeless faces.
Right. Needed to get all that out of the way. Here goes.
They were waiting well off to one side of the trail. The column's ragged end had already passed. Blistig stood facing the others, arms crossed. Kindly and Raband made their way over. Overhead, the jade strangers blazed with a green light bright enough to cast sharp shadows, and it seemed the desert air itself was confused, not nearly as chill as it should have been. There was no wind, and stillness surrounded the group. Blistig met Kindly's eyes unflinchingly.
I executed a traitor tonight, Kindly. That and nothing more. I was holding on to reserves of water, knowing a time of great need would come.
Indeed, Kindly replied.
How many casks was it again? Four? Five? For the officer corps, Kindly. With some, if we so judged, to the marines and heavies. It wouldn't have been much, granted, but something, maybe enough. Didn't the adjunct make it plain? The marines and the heavies before everyone else. In fact, the rest of them don't matter.
Lieutenant Poors was not under your command, Blistig.
Acts of treason fall under the purview of any commanding officer who happens to be present, Kindly. I acted within military law in this matter.
That water, said Ruthengard, was doled out to the children of the snake by the adjunct's direct command.
The adjunct knew nothing about it, Captain Good. So what you're saying makes no sense.
Faradan Sort snorted.
We all knew about your stash, Blistig. We've just been waiting for you to make your move. But you can't reclaim what was never yours in the first place, never mind that it's now all gone. If there was any treason here, Blistig, it was yours.
He sneered.
That's where you've lost the track. All of you! All this, we're in this together, rubbish. So that a lowly latrine digger gets the same portion as a fist, or a captain, or the damned adjunct herself. That's not how the world is, and with good reason. It's us highborn who've earned the greater portion, on account of our greater responsibilities, our greater skills and talents. That's the order of the world, friends.
Never knew you were highborn, Blistig, commented Faradan Sort.
The man scowled.
There's other paths to privilege, Sort. Look at you, after all, a deserter of the wall. Now here you are, a damned fist. And kindly here, straight up from the regular ranks. And that climb wasn't exactly meteoric, was it? Decades of mediocrity, right, kindly? You ended up just outlasting everyone else.
Everything you're saying, Blistig, said Ruthengard, is undermining your original argument. Seems there's not one highborn among us here. In fact, only the adjunct can make that claim.
A woman who betrayed her own class, Blistig said with a cold grin. Treason starts at the top when it comes to the bone hunters.
You plan on killing everyone then, Blistig?
Kindly, turns out I don't have to, do I? We're finished. All those warnings have proved true. This desert can't be crossed. We've failed. In every way, we've failed.
He shook his head.
I did Poor's a damned favor. I made it quick.
Expecting one of us to make it as quick for you? Ruthengard asked him. Blistig shrugged.
Why not? I don't care anymore. I really don't. She's already killed us all. Will it be your blade, Captain Good? Do me a favor. Make it the Icy One.
No one will be killing you this night, kindly said. He unclipped his sword belt and threw it to one side. We bear these titles, fists. Let's find their original meaning, you and me, Blistig.
You're joking, old man.
Faradan's sort turned to Kindly in alarm. What are you doing? Let's just drag him up before the adjunct. Kindly! But the man bulled forward, and Blistig moved to meet him. Two men too weak to do any real damage to the other. The fight was pathetic. Punches that couldn't break skin, blows that could barely bruise. Three or four exchanges and both men were kneeling 3 paces apart, gasping, heads held down. When Kindly looked up, Blistig threw sand into his eyes, lurched forward, grasped Kindly's head and drove it down onto one knee. Sort moved to intervene, but Ruthengard reached out and held her back. The impact should have shattered Kindly's nose, but it didn't. He punched Blistig's crotch. The man let out a strangled grunt, sagged down onto his side. Kindly tried to get up, fell back down, and then rolled onto his back, eyes squeezed shut, his chest heaving for breath.
That's it, Ruthengard said. They're done.
Stupid,
Faradan Salt snapped, pulling her arm out of God's grip. She went to stand over the two men.
What was the point? If the soldiers up there had seen this, you useless fools. Blistig, if we weren't all of us about to die, I would kill you. But you don't deserve that mercy. No, you're going to suffer through this night just like everyone else. She turned. Captain Revand, help your fist.
Blistig managed to work himself back onto his knees, and he slowly sat up.
She's killed us all for nothing.
He moved his glare from one face to the next.
I see it in your eyes, every one of you. You ain't got a thing to say to make it different. She's killed us. You know it the same as me. So, you want to kill me? You want to do her work for her?
He climbed with difficulty to his feet.
Give me the dignity of dying on my own.
You should have understood the value of that, said Ruthen. Before you stuck a knife in Poor's, Fist Blistig.
Maybe I should have. But he lied to me, and I don't like being lied to.
He pointed a finger at Kindly.
We're not done, you and me. I'll be waiting for you at Hood's Gate, old man.
Pathetic,
hissed Faradan Sort. They left Blistig where he was, and the way he held himself, it would be a while before he'd be ready to start walking again. Scannero moved alongside Ruthengard.
I was hoping we'd just kill him, she said low under her breath. The man's a murderer, after all. Poor's wasn't even wearing a weapon belt, and his knife was jammed hilt deep in a bale on the wagon.
If anyone will be looking for Blistig at Hood's Gate, It will be Lieutenant Poor's, don't you think? But Scannero shook her head.
I never believed in retribution beyond death's gates. Nobody is squatting on the other side, weighing and balancing a life's scales.
She stumbled slightly and Ruthen moved to catch her, felt her momentarily sag against him.
Shit, I may not last the night.
You will, Scannero. I'm not letting you die. You understand me?
There's no way out, and you know it, my love. You know it. You can't hide what I see in your eyes.
He said nothing, because there was nothing to say.
You'll forget me, won't you? Eventually, like all the rest.
Don't say that, Scannero. It's the wrong thing to think. For people like me, it's not forgetting that is our curse. It's remembering.
Her smile was faint, and she disengaged herself from his half-embrace.
Then I beg your love, do all that you can to forget me. Leave no memory behind to haunt you. Let it all fade. It shouldn't be hard. What we had didn't last long, did it?
He'd heard such words before. And this is why remembering is a curse.
Blistig faced back the way they'd come. Off in the distance, he could make out the glow of lanterns, the lights swinging low to the ground. Frowning, he watched as they came closer.
She killed us. Come the dawn, when we're all finished, unable to take another step, I'm going to go to her. I'm going to stick a knife in her. Not a fatal wound, not right away, no. In the stomach, where the acids will all leak out and start eating her up from the inside out. And I'll kneel over her, staring down into her pain, and that will be the sweetest sight I will ever see. A sight to carry me right into death. But even that won't be enough, not for what she's done to us. Kindly, at Hood's Gate, you're going to have to wait, because I won't be finished with Tavare Paran of House Paran.
T'lani Mas, carrying a makeshift stretcher on which lay a swaddled body. Beside this, a marine with blood covering his hands and forearms. Blistig squinted as they drew closer. But T'lani Mas walked past him, and the fist looked down at the pale face of the man on the stretcher. He grunted. The marine halted before him, saluted.
Fist, he said. Poor's ain't dead yet. What was the point of that, healer?
Blistig's answer was a fist smashing into his face, hard enough to crush his nose, send him reeling back, stumbling, falling to the ground, blood gushing down, he lay stunned. The healer moved to stand over him.
Thing is, Fist, he said, massaging his hand, what with all the shit Paws has gone through because of you, we decided to make him an honorary marine. Now, you go sticking a knife in a fellow marine and, well, we're out for you now. Understand me, sir? The marines are out for you.
Blistig listened to the man walk off in the wake of the T'lani Mas. He made it onto his side to spit out slime and blood and then grunted a laugh.
Aye, and a man is measured by his enemies. Do your worst, marines, so long as I get to her first.
It was some time before he managed to regain his feet, but when he set off after the column, his strides were stiff, jerking, filled with a strength past anything he had known before. In his head, three words made a mantra.
To see her, to see her, to see her.
The Kundril camp was being packed up, but the people doing the task moved with aching slowness. The claws upon their skin seemed to be dragging them down, and Badal watched in the midst of 20 or so of Rut's children as everything that was coming along for this final night was put in its proper place, everything but for the mother's tent, and she was yet to emerge. The midwives and other women had come out earlier, expressions guarded. And, though she could not be certain, in Badal's mind she saw but three figures remaining inside, the father, the mother, and the baby. Would this be their final home, then? A Kundril child came up to Sadik, pressing into his hands yet another toy, a bone top or whistle. She couldn't quite see it before Sadik slipped it into his sack and smiled his thanks. A new sack, too big to carry now. The Kundril children had been bringing him toys all day. The times she'd watched that procession, she'd wanted to cry. She'd wanted Sadik to cry. But she didn't understand why she wanted that. They were being kind, after all, and she didn't know why she saw those Kundril children as if they were but servants to something greater, something almost too big for words. Not at the instigation of adults, not even mothers and fathers. Not at the behest of pity, either. Didn't they want their toys? She had seen such precious things settle into Sadik's hand, had seen bright shining eyes lift shyly to Sadik in the moment of giving, and then fall away again. Children running off, too light-footed, flinging themselves into their friends' arms. And this went on, and Badal didn't understand. But how her heart ached. How she wanted Sadik to weep. How she wanted to feel her own tears. She spoke a poem under her breath.
Snakes do not know how to cry. They know too much and yearn for darkness. They know too much and fear the light. No one gives gifts to snakes, and no one makes of them a gift. They are neither given nor received. Yet in all the world, snakes do not know how to cry.
Sadik studied her, and she knew that he had heard. Of course it was for him, this poem, though she suspected that he did not know that.
But the man who will find him will. Maybe he'll cry when we cannot. Maybe he will tell this tale in such a way as to make his listeners cry, because we cannot.
A Kundril elder came up then and helped Sadik load his bag of toys onto a wagon. When the boy glanced over at Badal, she nodded. He climbed up to settle himself beside his treasure, and there, he believed, he would die.
But it is not to be. How will he survive? I wish I knew the answer to that, because a secret hides inside it.
The birth tent's flap was swept aside then, and the father emerged. His eyes were raw with weeping, yet there was a fire in them.
He is proud. He is defiant in his pride, and would challenge us all. I like this look. It is how a father should look.
Then behind him, out she came, unsteady on her feet, sagging with exhaustion, and in her arms a small bundled form. Badal gasped upon seeing Rut walking towards them. Where had he come from? Where had he been hiding? With his crooked arms, with a terrible need in his ancient face, he walked to stand before the mother. Anguish gripped Badal's heart, and she staggered in sudden weakness.
Where is Held? Held is gone. Held was gone long ago. And what Rut carried in his arms was us. All that way, he carried us.
The mother looked across at this boy, and Badal saw now that she was old. And so too was the father, old enough to be grandparents. She looked at Rut, his empty arms, the ravaged face.
She does not understand. How can she? He cannot hurt anyone, not Rut. He carried our hope, but our hope died. But it wasn't his fault. It wasn't his fault. Mother, if you had been there, if you had seen...
And she stepped forward then, that old woman, that mother with her last ever child, this stranger, and gently laid her baby into Rut's waiting arms. A gift beyond measure. And when she settled an arm about his shoulders, drawing him forward so that he could walk with them, her and her husband, and they set out, slowly, as it was all she could manage, in the wake of the nearest wagon, and all the Kundril began to move, Badal stood unmoving.
Sadik, I will tell you to remember this. These are the Kundril, the givers of gifts. Remember them, won't you?
And Rut walked like a king. From where he sat, Sadik watched as they made space on a Kundril wagon for the mother,
and for Rut and her child that he held, and then set out to catch up with the rest of the army. The man who was the father took the lead yoke at the wagon's head and strained as if he alone could shoulder this burden. Because it was no burden. As Sadik well knew, gifts never are. Ahead, the desert stretched on. Fiddler could see no end to it, and now believed he never would. He remembered that ancient shoreline of bones, the one they had left behind what seemed a century ago. No clearer warning could have been granted them, yet she had not hesitated. He had to hand it to her. The world was her enemy, and she would face it unblinking. She had led them onto this road of suffering in the name of the crippled god. And, to that god, what other path could there have been? She was making of them her greatest sacrifice. Was it as brutal and as simple as that? He did not think her capable of such a thing. He wanted to refuse the very thought. But here he walked, 50 or more paces ahead of them all. Even the Cundrill children were gone, leaving him alone. And behind him, a broken mass of humanity, somehow dragging itself forward like a beast with a crushed spine. It had surrendered all formation, each soldier moving as his or her strength dictated. They carried their weapons because they had forgotten a time when they didn't, and bodies fell one by one. Beneath the ghoulish light of the jade strangers, Fiddler set his eyes upon the distant, flat line of the horizon, his legs scissoring under him, the muscles too dead to feel pain. He listened to his own breaths, wheezing as the air struggled up and down a swollen, parched windpipe. In so vast a landscape, he felt his world contracting step by step, and soon, he knew, all he would hear would be his own heart, the beats climbing down, losing all rhythm, and finally falling still. That moment waited somewhere ahead. He was on his way to find it. Whispering motion around him now, drifting out from a fevered mind. He saw a horseman at his side, close enough to reach out, if he so wanted, and set a hand upon the beast's patched, salt-streaked shoulder. The man riding the beast he knew all too well. Broke his leg, a toppling pillar of all things. Mallet, I see you. You wanted to work on that leg. Got damned insubordinate about it, in fact. But he didn't listen. That's his problem. He only listens when he feels like it. Trots, you're still the damned ugliest bargast I ever saw. They bred 'em that way in your tribe, didn't they? To better scare the enemy. Did they breed your women to be half blind, too? Keep the stones balanced. That's the only way to make it through. So where's Quick Ben, Callum? I want to see you all here, friends. Hedge, well, he's stepped out of this path. Can't look him in the eye these days. It's the one bad twist in this whole thing, isn't it? Maybe you can talk to him, Sergeant. Talk him back to how it should be. Hedge is where we want him, Fid. What? We sent him to you. To this, I mean. He's walked a lonely path back, Sapper. Mallet then spoke. But he thought he'd made it all the way, too, when he stood before you, Fiddler, only to have you back away. Oh, gods. Hedge, I better find him. Chew it all out, come the dawn. We'll make it that far, won't we, Sergeant? Until it rises, aye, Shepherd. Until it rises. And then? You're so eager to join us? Whiskey Jack, please, where else would I go? If we were just waiting for the dawn, soldier, you'd have to ask, what in Hood's name for? You think we'd see you put through all of this for nothing? And then there's Hedge. He's here to die beside you, and that's it. We sent him to you so you could just kiss and make up? God's below, Fiddler. You're not that important in this wretched scheme. Well, said Mallet, he might be, Sergeant. Made captain now, didn't he? Got himself his own company of marines and heavies. Bloody insufferable now, his old Fid. Sky's peeling, Whiskey Jack said. Because you're on damned horses, I can't see it. False dawn, growled Trots. And Fid's fading, Sergeant. We can't hold on here much longer.
once he stops thinking past his feet.
I was a mason's apprentice, had dreams of being a musician, getting fat and drunk in some royal court.
Not this again.